Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is David Legg, our African football guru. Good evening, David.
Thank you, Sonny.
African football fans looking forward to some big 2017 Nations Cup qualifying matches. David, how about a preview?
Right, Sonny. It all begins at Juba in South Sudan on Wednesday afternoon, a match between South Sudan and Benin. That's on Wednesday, Sonny, and it'll go right through to next Tuesday evening in Marrakesh in Morocco, the final match between Morocco and Cape Verde. All in all, you'll have 50 games. And what the situation is, Sonny, is you've got the top two seeds in each group facing each other, so it's really exciting and also crucial. And then you've got the third and fourth seeds facing each other, and for them, of course, it's a question of trying to win matches to keep in contention. I believe, Sonny, three pairings stand out in these back-to-back qualifiers. They're Cape Verde against Morocco, Nigeria against Egypt, and Cameroon against South Africa. And let me explain why. Morocco against Cape Verde. Well, Cape Verde are ranked number one now in Africa. I'm not the only one who's a little bit skeptical about that. I think they're definitely a top 10 side, strongest team in Africa. I have my doubts, but we're going to find out pretty soon just how strong they are. Now, Morocco are only ranked 19th in Africa, but they're now in the hands of the man that we call the magician, Herve Renard, the Frenchman, who, interestingly, doesn't do well in his homeland. He's taken charge of two clubs in the top flight. The first was relegated, and the second sacked him. But when it comes to Africa, Renard certainly has got the Midas touch. In 2012, he took Minos Zambia all the way to the title against exceptional odds. And then in 2015, the great underachievers of African football, Ivory Coast, finally won the title, and they won it under Herve Renard. Interestingly, Herve Renard once worked as a rubbish collector in the suburbs of Paris, and now he collects trophies instead. He's won the Cup of Nations, Sonny, twice with Zambia and Ivory Coast. He's the only coach to actually win it with different countries. He's now hunting a record, because Hassan Shahata, the great Egyptian coach, he won it three times in a row. So if Renard can win it with Morocco, he would equal that record. It's going to be really interesting, Sonny, because Morocco have been in the doldrums for some time now. They used to be a real power in African football, but of late, I would call them middleweights rather than heavyweights. Now, the first meeting between Cape Verde and Morocco is on Saturday in Pry. And then 3 days later in Marrakesh comes a return match. And I think this is going to tell us a lot about Cape Verde and also about Morocco. So we look forward to those games. The Moroccans, they've set some pretty stiff targets for Herve Renard. They've told them to qualify for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. And they've also told them to make at least the semifinals of the 2017 Cup of Nations in Gabon. But I think right now his focus will be very much on Cape Verde rather than the finals in Gabon. Nigeria and Egypt, Sonny, that is normally appearing in the finals of the Cup of Nations, not in the qualifying, because they're such traditionally strong teams that they avoid each other. But by a fluke of the draw, they came out together in the same group. And I immediately said, wow, this is a big one. The Nigerians, very erratic. In 2013, they won the title. In 2015, they didn't even qualify for the finals, and now they're already trailing the Egyptians by 2 points. But the Egyptians have had convincing victories over Tanzania and Chad, whereas Nigeria, after beating Chad, were held to a goalless draw away to Tanzania. Another factor is that the Nigerians are under a new chief. This time it's Samson Seyesia. Sunday Alise, he unleashed a rant on social media, and soon after that he resigned. He just didn't seem to get on well with the Nigerian officials. The Nigerians have said they're looking for a foreign coach, but they didn't have time to get one for these Egyptian matches. So in comes Samson Seyesia, whose most recent achievement was guiding the Nigerian national team to the under-23 title. It's a big step up for him now, and two really crucial games against the Pharaohs. The Pharaohs, on the other hand, they've had a similarly erratic situation, Sonny. If you go back from 2006, they won the Cup of Nations three consecutive times, and then they failed to qualify for three consecutive times. So I think they're really up for it this time. The Egyptians will never admit it, of course, but I think they, deep down, would probably be satisfied if they can share the points with Nigeria, either win-win or two draws, and then that would retain that two-point lead over the Super Eagles. Nigeria, on the other hand, they'll obviously say they want to win both games, but I think if they can win at home in Kaduna and draw away in Cairo, they would be more than happy. So really intriguing ties. And the first match is in Kaduna on Friday. The return match is in Cairo next Tuesday. The game between Cameroon and South Africa is important for a number of reasons, too. One is that they're both former champions. The Indomitable Lions have won the title four times and Bafana Bafana once. But more relevant to South Africa, they desperately need not one, but two victories over Cameroon. And that's going to be extremely difficult because, as regular listeners to the Sunny Side of Sport know, Cameroon have never lost an Africa Cup of Nations qualifier at home. And also interesting is that because of repairs going on to the national stadium in Yaoundé, this match will be played, the first game, in Limbe, which is very close to Douala on the Atlantic coast. South Africa have made a disastrous start in their group, drawing at home with Gambia and then losing away to Mauritania. While on the other hand, Vincent Aboubakar has scored twice. His first goal gave them the win against Mauritania, and his second goal gave them a win against Gambia. You have got Cameroon sitting pretty at the top of the table with 6 points. Then you've got Mauritania with three, and Gambia and South Africa, amazingly, South Africa, bottom of the table. They've got 1 point each, but Bafana Bafana have got an inferior goal difference. So some people are talking about the fact that if the South Africans can draw away and win at home, it'll be enough. I don't think so, Sonny. I think they've got to win both games. So the really standout ties in these match day threes and four are Cape Verde against Morocco, Nigeria against Egypt, and Cameroon against South Africa.
Turning to African club football, David, the draw recently held for the CAF Champions League, the continent's premier club competition. How does that look?
Sonny, we got the CAF Champions League last 16 draw, and it is the club of DR Congo against Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa, Almarek of Sudan against Anton Satif of Algeria, Wydad Casablanca of Morocco against TP Mazembe of DR Congo, the title holders, and Yimba of Nigeria against the 12 Sahel of Tunisia, Stade Malien of Mali against Desco of Zambia, Young Africans of Tanzania against Al Ahly of Egypt, ASEC Mimosas of Ivory Coast against Al Ahly Tripoli of Libya, and Zamalek of Egypt against Mouloudia Bejaia of Algeria. The first legs will be on April 8, 9, and 10, and the second legs on April 19 and 20. And those second legs, Sonny, are going to make history. They will become the first matches to officially be staged in midweek. I've asked CAF numerous times what is the reason for this change, because traditionally CAF club competitions are staged on Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays. But CAF, as they often act like a secret service agency, are refusing to tell me. It must be some very spectacular reason why, Sonny. But there's going to be now this shorter distance between the two legs. You'll have Friday, Saturday and Sunday. Then we go through the following weekend. And then on the Tuesdays and Wednesdays, we're going to have the return matches. What I will watch with particular interest there, Sonny, is the crowds. Now, when World Cup matches are played in midweek during working hours, the crowds tend to suffer because people simply cannot get off work to go and watch these games. Another factor is, of course, that many African football associations are cash-strapped, and they prefer to play matches in the afternoon because it cuts down on the cost of using floodlights and the electricity bill. But again, that can lead to smaller crowds. And when you've got a stadium that holds up to 60,000 people, as was the case in Togo not so long ago, and you've got a crowd of about 20,000, it does not give you a great atmosphere.
David, let's turn to the CAF Confederation Cup tournament now. And what does the draw look like there?
Right, Sonny. It's V-Cup Makanda of Congo-Brazzaville against Sagrada Esperanca of Angola. Maludia Oran of Algeria against Kwakab Marrakesh of Morocco. Azam of Tanzania against Esperance of Tunisia. Zanaco of Zambia against Stade Gabessien of Tunisia. CS Constantine of Algeria against El Makawash of Egypt. Alassi Shendi of Sudan against Mediama of Ghana. FUS Rabat of Morocco against Villa of Uganda. And Munana of Gabon against ENPPI of Egypt. Same situation as the Champions League. First legs, April 8, 9, and 10. And second legs on April 19 and 20.
We look forward to those matches, David. That's David Legg, our African football guru, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa.
The sunny side of sports? More sunny side of sports. Listen to our new expanded show now on VOA Africa.
Leslie King Saber, writing from Kano, Nigeria, gives a thumbs up to the sunny side of sports expansion and adds, Sunny, we'll never stop asking for more sports. Austin Mwenda sent me another message from Zimbabwe, writing, Big up, guys. Keep doing what you're doing. Thanks, Austin. Now let's go to Cairo, where in an effort to boost Egypt's flagging tourism industry, skydivers recently took part in a high-flying competition, jumping from helicopters over the Great Pyramids. Hamada El Rassam reports from the Egyptian capital.
Skydivers say the competition at Egypt's famed Great Pyramids was aimed at attracting more visitors to the country. Egypt has suffered a $1.3 billion drop in tourism revenue over the past few months. More than 200 skydivers from 17 countries took part in the recent three-day competition. Skydivers jumped from more than 1,100 meters high and tried to land as close as possible to their targeted spot. Organizers say this event sends a message to the world.
Egypt is strong and it will never be affected by all the chaos going on. We want to emphasize to the world that our country is safe and tourists are welcome.
Tourism is one of the most important sectors of Egypt's economy. The suspected terrorist downing of a Russian plane over North Sinai last year badly hurt the tourism industry, driving away nearly 4 million tourists. To bring them back, analysts say, Egypt needs to not only better market the industry, but review its security policies.
What is required is actually some kind of a multi-dimensioned plan. You need to, first of all, reassess all the counterterrorism strategies that have been going on for the past 2 years, because Egypt has been in an official open war against terrorism since 2013. So where did that go? Where did that lead? How effective were these strategies? This needs to be reviewed. On the other hand, the Egyptian tourism sector needs to be marketed in a lot more professional manner than it is right now.
While sporting events are good publicly, he says, the government needs to do more to support and protect the tourism industry. Hamad El Rassam for VOA News, Cairo.
If you tuned into Monday's Sunny Side of Sports show, you heard me mention how Russia was banned from the recent World Indoor Athletics Championships here in the United States because of widespread doping violations. Ben Nichols is a spokesman for the World Anti-Doping Agency in Montreal, Canada. VOA's Jeffrey Young, no relation, sports fans, asked him, why is using performance-enhancing drugs unethical in sports?
Well, I think we only have to see where we are in sport today and the reaction that we see from not only athletes across the world, the clean athletes who we represent as a body, but also the public at large. There is still a great deal of disgust and unhappiness when a doping scandal arises. And we know from our role, the athletes want a body who represents clean sport, who provides rules that ensure that cheating cannot take place and that sport is based on fair values. It's based on not artificial means to success. And I think the clearest indication that we see is when we see a doping scandal, we see the public uproar to such a scandal, and that's clear that the public still want to see sport compete in a fair, objective manner.
When athletes train for whatever their particular sport is, they go through all kinds of physical conditioning. They do a lot of things in order to make themselves most competitive and most capable in whatever sport they happen to take part in. Taking the devil's advocate side, why would it be unethical or wrong if you can do weight training, if you can do this, if you can do that, if you can do all of these things for physical conditioning? Why is it unethical to take substances, to take drugs, which enhance and boost whatever you're able to achieve with that physical training? Why is that wrong?
Well, it's not only unethical. I think public opinion, as I touched on already, public opinion is such that we don't accept playing sport by and winning by artificial means. We believe sport should be competed where everyone is working to their greatest extent, where they're training hard through nutrition, through diet, through hard work, not through taking banned substances and looking for an edge through artificial means. And I think we also have to take in consideration the health aspect that is key. Nowadays, there are many banned substances which are dangerous for the health, which should not be taken unless there is a medical reason, for example. And we have a duty to ensure that athletes are only taking things that they should be taking and are allowed to take. So there's a health aspect, there's a spirit of sport aspect as well, if you like, and there's the performance enhancing aspect. We don't believe that society today wants performance enhancement through artificial means.
Many people who are avid fans of sport are people who love the comparison of statistics. This particular runner in this particular Olympics was able to do the 100-meter dash in this many seconds or fractions of a second. And in the 1936 Olympics, Jesse Owens was able to do the same thing in this many seconds. Much of sport is a matter of comparison. And because of this love of comparisons, even in the American sport of baseball, people who are players today are often compared to people like Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb, who played 80, 90, even 100 years ago. And what I'm bringing up is this. The use of performance-enhancing drugs distorts and changes the ability to fairly compare, statistically, an athlete from today to an athlete from 20, 30, 50, 70, 100 years ago. Could you reflect on that?
Yes, I mean, I certainly acknowledge that people like to see world records beaten. They like to see comparisons. They like to see human nature advance, and that's why we love sport. But I repeat that I don't think they want to see that done in a way that where things have been taken which weren't being taken before. They want to see humans advance through hard work, through diligence, through striving to succeed. And I think we have to appreciate that athletes today, there are athletes that will look for an edge. We're not so naive to think that doping will not exist. I think cheating exists in all forms of society, but our role is to minimize this behavior so that it doesn't become the norm, it doesn't become the majority taking banned substances, because that would be a dereliction of our duties, and I think people would be appalled if they tuned in and knew it was a free-for-all and a case of who has the best chemist.
That's Ben Nichols, spokesman for the World Anti-Doping Agency, and he was talking with VOA's Jeffrey Young from Montreal, Canada. Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is Andrew Palcheski, the voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
What's trending in the sports world on this Tuesday?
Well, in the world at large, of course, everyone's talking about the attacks in Brussels, Belgium, and it does have a sport connection because the Belgian national team was actually slated to have a practice, and they've canceled that, and the players are instead turning their efforts to social media, tweeting out their support, encouraging people to be safe, and hoping that this situation doesn't escalate.
And the Belgian national football team ranked number one in the world, according to the FIFA March rankings. So we send our sympathies to the players and the people of Belgium.
Absolutely. And this is actually another sport connection. Is the brother of Novak Djokovic. Of course, Novak Djokovic, the number one tennis player, male tennis player in the world. His brother, Georgi, was on a flight into Brussels, and actually his flight was diverted. So he was live tweeting as his flight was diverted, as they were escorted off the plane at a different airport outside of Brussels and taking pictures of kind of the chaos and confusion. So a lot of people following along with that. He is a tennis player himself, not as highly ranked as his brother, but he's still a professional tennis player, so he has quite a following on social media. So he was getting a lot of reaction from that and kind of reliving or living through this and bringing us along with him as he was doing so.
On a lighter note, Andrew, it must be quite the pressure to have Novak Djokovic as your brother in the tennis world.
Absolutely. I'm sure that it's quite a challenge to have, you know, Andy Murray has something similar with his brother Jamie. Although Jamie Murray is now finding some success in men's doubles and has won some Grand Slam titles in men's doubles. So it's sibling rivalry is always, you know, even when you look at Venus and Serena, there's always in tennis especially, there can be a lot of sibling rivalries, but it seems to be all in good fun.
Still with tennis, Andrew, you told our VOA listeners on Monday about how there's controversy regarding prize money for men and women in professional tennis. Any updates on that front?
There is. So the big update is that Raymond Moore, who is the CEO of the Indian Wells BNP Paribas tennis tournament, has actually resigned his position. This is after he went to the press and said the women in the WTA, the Women's Tennis Association, should be praying every night and thanking God because of the men, because the men carry the women. And of course, we had Billie Jean King, as we talked about, who came out on Twitter. Serena Williams spoke out against this, saying that these comments were terribly sexist and that there should be ramifications. And surely enough, that social media campaign has led to Raymond Moore's resignation. Now, interestingly, I saw just before I came in here, Martina Navratilova, who, of course, a huge tennis icon.
Another pioneer.
Another pioneer for tennis and for women athletes in general. She tweeted out an article from the New York Times, and the title of this article was "Only a Man Can Forget When Women Ruled Tennis." And it talks about her rivalry with Chris Everett all through the 70s and the 80s, and when that was the marquee matchup. Some argue more so than even Federer and Nadal or Djokovic and Federer or any of those matchups today. This was the premier matchup in tennis and in sports. And she tweeted out that article and that headline, and all she wrote was, "Yup." That's all she put afterwards. So letting her actions speak louder than words. But of course, she, with that short little statement coming out in support of women's tennis, women athletes.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, we're still talking about March Madness. The games are coming up on Thursday as the Sweet 16 gets underway. And actually, a lot of people talking on social media that the team should be reseeded. This is something in the past couple years that there's been some momentum behind it, saying, well, we have these 16 teams. Why don't we take them and re-rank them based on how they played so far? Because it's a whole new ball game, so to speak. So we've had some sites like ESPN here in the U.S. that have re-ranked the team, saying, no, this team is actually the overall number one because they played the best. This one that we thought was maybe a good team, maybe not so much.
Andrew Palcheski, VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the March 22nd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer John Dryden, and thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Safe drinking water is fundamental to healthy lives and prosperous communities. To focus attention on the importance of clean water and to advocate for the sustainable management of freshwater resources, on March 22nd of every year, we observe International World Water Day. Every person needs at least 20 liters of water per day for drinking, cooking, sanitation, and hygiene needs alone. Yet some 2 billion people worldwide do not have access to safe drinking water, and more than 2.4 billion people do not have access to improved sanitation for adequate disposal of human waste. People who do not have access to clean water and sanitation are at greatly increased risk of infectious diseases, which can lead to physical and cognitive impairments and premature death. Contaminated water and poor sanitation are among the main causes of severe diarrheal diseases in the very young, the second leading cause of death in children under 5 years old. According to the World Health Organization, or WHO, some 760,000 young children die of diarrheal diseases across the world every year. It is further estimated that as few as 5 incidences of diarrhea in children under the age of 2 can lead to lifelong effects, such as developmental delays and stunting. Clearly, an adequate supply of safe water and access to basic sanitation are the most basic necessities of life. But the importance of clean water goes so much further than the assurance of hydration and cleanliness. This year's theme for the United Nations World Water Day is Better Water, Better Jobs. The slogan is meant to bring attention to the fact that nearly all jobs, regardless of the sector, depend directly on water. Cleaner water makes for a safer, more productive environment, results in healthier food, and contributes to a greener economy and sustainable development. But ensuring that people everywhere have access to all the clean water they need, where they need it, when they need it, reliably and sustainably, requires global cooperation. On this World Water Day, the United States remains steadfast in our commitment to achieving a water-secure future, and we invite all stakeholders to partner with us to save water and save lives.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We will discuss the Benin presidential election. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Voice of America's Daybreak Africa. Join me Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC for the latest in African news, features, and sports. We are also available on the internet at www.voaafrica.com. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show on the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.